100 years, people listened to the scriptures. It wasn't until the printing press was invented that people read it on a regular basis. So as you hear these words, it comes across in a different way in which we are used to. People of God, this is a story about Bethlehem. And it's a journey into the starry nights, the countryside in which there is a place in which a man and a woman have a child. And in Bethlehem, there is a great commotion as to what's going on. This is a story that you could say belongs to why we are here celebrating Christmas. A child is born in Bethlehem, Christ Jesus. But it is also exactly that story in which we see a journey to Bethlehem under the starry nights in which a child is born. That is what's taking place in Ruth chapter 4. It's a beautiful parallel that points in the same direction. That is why we are here, because of the redemption that takes place in the story of Ruth, but in this little manger. It foreshadows what's going on in God's plan. You see, God has a promise that He has given to His people throughout the Old Testament into the New Testament that is about redemption in ways we couldn't have expected. Boaz is sitting at the gate where the real business of the community is conducted and presents Ruth's case to the kinsman redeemer as an opportunity for him to get land and increase his wealth. But you see, the kinsman redeemer refuses to marry Ruth. And it is then in love that Boaz steps in. So we went from something that I'm going to bring up in a few minutes, where transactions is trumped by love. And of course, Boaz redeems Ruth. They're married. They have this child who ends up being the beginning of a long line of people that leads to King David, which is a long line of people from which Jesus Christ comes. It's a beautiful story, hard to connect if you're just reading the Bible for the first time. But it is Christ who is our Redeemer that's going back and shedding light again on the story that had been long told about the kinsman Redeemer, which we read here in Ruth 4. But let's stop here a minute and talk about this kinsman Redeemer, because it's interesting that Ruth is to be married. And there's all kinds of customs. That's, again, difficult, as we mentioned last week, too. Difficult to grasp because it's not our context. It's not the way we are used to living. It's not the way we see transactions. And we certainly aren't passing sandals to each other when we buy land from another. And so this is all so far-fetched, but in a sense, there's a marriage that takes place in a way that includes a transaction of land to try to continue the name of the deceased, which, of course, we read about and learned about back in Ruth chapter 1, when Naomi and Ruth came from a land of famine and went to Bethlehem to try to find a life again. And Ruth, of course, lost her husband as well as Naomi. And she is going where Naomi is going and is going to make Naomi's God her God, and I will go and even be buried where you're buried and so on, which is an extreme sense of faithfulness that is something we don't necessarily see today. In fact, we could see all kinds of reasons and excuses in the years that this took place in which Ruth would say, well, I really thought this is what was going to happen, so I'm going to go back now. Or I don't really know if I want to do this anymore. It's an interesting commitment that Ruth makes regarding faithfulness that leads to redemption. And I choose my words carefully. I also think it's important to understand that the first kinsman redeemer says, oh, hang on a minute. I was going to pick up Ruth and the land and carry that transaction and pass you the sandal, but it's too hard. It's interesting because there's a sense in which we, as materialistic North American cultured people, feel about cost and how much it costs that we suddenly change our mind as well. It's interesting because sometimes we think the value isn't there. And I don't know how we determine that, but many of us understand the value as not being there by some metrics measuring that we've picked up that was only taught by our culture. I don't know what it is in that culture that made the first kinsman redeemer. And the reason why he was asked first was because he was the closest relative, and that's how their culture worked. So, he says no because the cost was too great. There's often a story that I tell that helps me understand a little about how we deal with cost and price tags and value. It's an old oak table in New York. It's a true story. A businessman who actually fell in love with the table. It was an antique table sitting on the doorstep of this young woman's antique store, I think it was called. New and used, I don't know. But it was outside and it was on sale for $400 and it was actually originally $500. And the old businessman came by and when he fell in love with the table, he demanded in not so many words that it would be a $300 table. He says, that's what I'll offer. And the lady says, no, it's a $500 table. She says, I'm not changing the price. In fact, I've discounted it for today only. If you want a table, it's for $400. It's a great deal. He says, well, this old oak table, look at it, it's cracked. And she says, well, that's what old oak tables are. It's 100 years old. It's a valuable table. It's got history. He says, it's wobbly. Look at that. I want it for $300. She says, wobbly? This is an antique. This is what makes it so valuable. And they go back and forth. To speed up the story, it's interesting because the businessman stands on the sidewalk in New York and says, I want that thing for $300. Well, good old garage sale bartering at work. Bring it on. The lady says, no, it's a $500 table. It's marked down to $400. I go, woo, go girl. He says, I demand you change the price of the table. She grabs the price tag off the table. She walks back inside and she comes up and she slaps up the new table, the new sign on the table, and it's back up to $500. So it's a true story. And you can ask, did he buy it? Yes, he did. What did he pay for it? He did pay $500. And the parable tells us a little about the cost that we are willing to pay, because when that guy brought the table home, I think it's arguable to say that he treated it like a valuable table. Now, forget the numbers. If he would have got it for what he wanted it for, because he loved the table so much, then maybe he would have got what he paid for. Just a transaction that cheapened the table that he said he loved so greatly. And so when he took it home, perhaps the table would not be in a prominent space and ending up in another thrift store or a thrift store down the road if he would have paid the cheapened price that he paid for. But instead, he pays a rather high price. He pays more than he wants to. And in the end, finds out that it becomes a valuable table that ends up having a prominent place in his house. Doesn't end up at the garage sale in a couple of years. The reason I tell the story is because in my mind, I know that there are many things that I've loved, but I didn't want to pay for it. And in some ways, I think this first kinsman redeemer in Ruth chapter 4 felt that the cost was too high to redeem anything from his standpoint. And so he said, it's too big of a risk. I can't do it. And maybe he was just thinking in transactional ways in which he didn't really understand, like Boaz, what was all at stake here. Because Boaz blew the doors off the place and said, with great love, I'll take it. I'll take her. I'll take it all. Seeing the beauty of who Ruth was and her faithfulness and put value to that. And suddenly the transaction and the metrics are all out the window because love trumped the whole story from what we see in Boaz's conversation. Now, back in the day, this kind of conversation took place amongst elders. And unlike today where we have elders that gather together at a meeting at 7 o'clock on some weeknight. The elders back in the customs of the Old Testament would be people who would just simply be men over the age of 45, I think, who had sons that would mind the store back in the town, and they would sit at the city gates, and they would muse about the way their community was being run. And they would talk about everything from business plans to city planning to the growth to who gets married to who and the transactions of land. And that's what those men were doing in terms of being elders in their community, which is where Boaz is talking to this kinsman redeemer. Hey, buddy, you're up. You're the closest relative. You should take it. And he says no to the whole system because it's too great of a cost for him. Well, of course, this is foreshadowing as to who our Christ is, this child that we're celebrating today, and the cost that's involved in the eyes of God to redeem us. As much as this is a marriage story, and we could talk a lot about marriage stories. Last week, we talked about the proposals a little bit. Today, we talk about marriage stories, about what it means to be married in light of Ephesians chapter 5, where we give ourselves up as Christ did for the church and give ourselves up as the church does for Christ, and having that model in order that redemption can take place. Now, to highlight it a bit, I have a story about a church planter who actually is in Tucson, Arizona. You can go visit him. Name's Rod Hugan. And he told me the story about how he wanted to go in front of the elders. And I use this because this is where the conversation in Ruth is taking place. Because he had a call from God to plant a church. And the elders said, no. Now, he was in a formal meeting like this, standing in front of a podium like this. He's about 6'9". He weighs like 380 pounds. This guy's huge. He's got a big voice. And he's just, I don't know, he's just huge. Doesn't matter about his stature, his voice, his presence. And they said no. And he says to me, when he told me this story, Rod, he says, I really felt called. And I didn't know what to do, and I stood in front of the elders, he says. And I took my glasses, and because I sweat a lot, because I'm a big guy, he says, I wiped the sweat off my brow, and he just cried. And just was a blubbery mess, and didn't move from the podium. And there was a man in the back, he says, to my left. And in the middle of my crying, this man, who was a business entrepreneur, stood up and he says, I'll take you. That's it? He comes over and talks to him after. And as you hear the rest of the story, this businessman, not knowing what all kinds of strings he might have pulled or if he was just independently wealthy to the point, but he ended up believing him in such a way and understanding the faithfulness that Rod presented there that day that he felt the need to just stand up amongst all the elders and say, I'll take you. It's like the team picking up the undrafted guy and redeeming him. A little bit outside of the marriage trajectory, the marriage vernacular, the marriage timeline story, but it helps us understand a little as to what's happening here in Ruth 4. The man did not stand up to say, I'll take you, because he thought it was a great business transaction. He didn't do it for any other reason other than his great love for Rod. And today you can visit this church that's flourishing with people that have no church backgrounds in Tucson, Arizona, called The Village. A great story of redemption. You know, the Beatles wrote All You Need Is Love. Rob Bell wrote a book, Love Wins. Paul said the greatest of these is love. There's a great deal we've learned about love. But there is nothing greater than what we've learned from Christ Himself. A child born in a manger that grew up to fulfill that meaning. In fact, to fulfill the law and the prophets, as we read in Matthew. To fulfill all the transactions that were to take place. And so now we don't have to go home today and put blood on our doorposts in order for Passover to take place. We don't have to do things like sacrifice a goat. All those transactions are trumped by love. A substitution that is unexplainable unless you talk about love. Love took over the fulfillment of the law. God became one of us, had compassion on us, and gave us hope, peace, love, and joy. And today we stand here on the heels of going forth in the name of Ruth with extreme faithfulness amidst no reasons other than the fact that he loved us first to honor those words, "Where you go, Lord, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." A proposal, perhaps, that we have been given by Christ himself, our Redeemer, to make us into his family. A cost that was not too great to him, but was birthed out of great love that began in this long line of relatives, starting with Boaz and Ruth and their template of love for each other. I often wonder if I just had the Old Testament and I was walking around under the starry skies of Bethlehem, if I would have grasped the truth and the wonder of who this projected baby, this new king, born for us, if I would have understood that, just having the Old Testament. As I learn and love to bathe in the good news of who Christ is to us, being born a man and showing us how to love, and I'm glad that I receive this good news to propel me to move forward in greater faithfulness each day, knowing that, as we discussed last week, we have been given a home in which Ruth had no home, nor did Naomi, and that we have been given a family, the spiritual family that Christ is calling us to be part of, in which Ruth and Naomi began back in the famine days of having no family because their husbands had died and they were just two in-laws looking for a life. And that now we receive the food in which Christ gives to us, the food that we know is spiritual food that's filled with nutrients and ingredients such as joy and peace and hope and love. Food that lasts forever. This is our Christ, a child born in a manger, unsuspectingly a king, except for those who understand and have awaited for this triumphal message to come into their lives, so that they can celebrate this child, knowing what he has to offer to us. Let's pray.